This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We have got a great show for you. In the last hour today, we are going to talk about Boeing's nightmare continues, defective parts on their wing. Do you worry about flying? You know, when we talk about the Federal Aviation Administration and what they're actually doing from a regulatory standpoint, you begin to wonder whether or not they're doing anything. The problems continue to mount. We'll talk about that and some of the other issues that are going on here locally and up in Baton Rouge in the last hour. In the second hour, we have a great lineup for you. We have the Homeland Security and EOC directors for St. Tammany, Jefferson Parish, and Orleans Parish. We're in the hurricane season. We have heard all the forecasts from NOAA as to how many storms we're going to have any number of issues that require cooperation amongst the parishes in order to make sure that we're in the best position to meet the challenge. All three of these gentlemen, who I happen to know all three and have a lot of respect for all, will be in the studio to talk about the challenges and how they go about meeting those challenges as we face the hurricane season this year with some unusual circumstances. A very high river, a lot of water in and around, flooding, bunch of different challenges. We'll talk about those issues in the second hour. In this hour, get ready, because I think your blood pressure is going to go up. And if it doesn't, you're just flat stoned, because this story is unbelievable. I don't know the whole story. I just know snippets of it. And I called Rafael Goyeneche with the Metropolitan Crime Commission to come over this morning. He has accommodated us. He's done his research, and I'm sure it's going to reveal something that you're just going to shake your head and wonder who's minding the ship. Rafael, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Noel.
So I called you yesterday. I saw the article in the paper about this 18-year-old who's booked with a quadruple shooting, 81 burglary counts across New Orleans. This guy has racked up. Right now, he's the criminal of the month, as far as I'm concerned. And trying to figure out, how's this guy out of jail? They keep rebooking. He's out of jail. You looked into it. What does this reveal?
Well, I think New Orleans has received a wake-up call to the distinction between nonviolent offenses and violent offenders. So for the last 6-8 months, there's been story after story about automobile burglaries, automobile thefts, residential burglaries, and those are deemed to be nonviolent offenses. But the home videos and business videos show that when people are breaking into cars and stealing cars and breaking into businesses, they're doing so armed with weapons. And they're breaking into cars and homes to look for firearms. They're stealing cars to use as transportation in the commission of violent offenses. So what we're seeing with Theron Glover is that in February of this year, he was arrested for some nonviolent offenses, some burglaries, and the court has a new assessment tool that is provided pursuant to a grant that the city obtained to reduce the pretrial jail population. They assess everyone that's booked, and they rate them on a 1 to 5 level, 1 being the least serious, 5 being the most serious. And he was rated a level 1, was given a free release, and was back out on the street. Within a month, he was arrested again for over a dozen counts of burglaries. This time, He was given a $2,000 commercial surety bond, rated a level 3. And level 3 just means that you are a moderate offender and you should be released for free or low bail, and he was. And the consequence of that is that he just needs to call in to a pretrial staff member once a month.
And on a $2,000 bond, you put up less than
13%. You put up 13%.
Less than $300, you're out.
Yes, okay. Yes. So he's out. And then May 31st, he gets booked with over 37 counts of burglaries. So between April the 12th, when he was arrested, I'm sorry, March the 12th, and May 31st, he was charged with an additional 37 counts. And on June the 1st, they connected him to some shootings that occurred on May the 13th, where he jumped out of a car and opened fire on a group of people, wounded 4 people. He was rated a level 3. He's remained in custody because his bond now is over $460,000. And he was booked last night with even more counts. So right now he's approaching 90 felony counts as an 18-year-old. And the thing that it's bad enough that this offender has committed, an 18-year-old has committed all these offenses, but the assessment tool for his 2 most recent bookings went from a level 3 to a level 1, meaning that if a judge paid attention to that, they would recommend him for free release with no supervision.
Wait, say that again. He was a level 3 in the April booking, and then after all of these additional charges, he ended up going back to
a
level 1.
Which means free release and no supervision. So obviously the judge that set bail in all of these subsequents wasn't paying attention to the assessment tool.
Or was just intentionally ignoring it.
Well, exactly. Because they were looking at, Louisiana law requires that a judge set bail on the offender in the context of the offense and the danger that they pose to the community. So this assessment tool is supposed to measure all of that. Obviously, it's flawed, it's skewed, and the judge that set bail on his subsequent arrests and rebookings didn't pay any heed to the fact that he was rated a level 1 in the last 3 times that he was rebooked into
so
the
system. So he got rated a level 1 after he got out of the car, shot at people, had more burglaries added on. He was a level 3 before that, and when they rebooked him on that, he moved from a level 3 back to a level 1.
Yes, yes. Even though he's still in custody, because he can't afford to make bail now. You're looking at almost half a million dollars.
What's a word that is worse than insanity? I mean, I don't know, but
the assessment tool that's in place right now. That's the synonym I'd use.
Assessment tool, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that makes absolutely no sense. That right. With more charges, you are viewed as less of a risk to the community.
Right, right. So I think we've got a couple of problems. We've got a crime problem with respect to youthful offenders, and this is an 18-year-old, so even though he's a teenager in the eyes of the law, he's an adult. But there are organizations or small groups of these youthful offenders, some of which are young adults, some of which are juveniles. We saw, you know, a glaring, horrific example about a month and a half ago where a man and his wife were alerted by their car alarm going off. They went outside to confront the person that was in the car. He opened fire, murdered the wife, Mrs. Townsend, wounded the husband, and turns out that this is a juvenile offender. So, you know, that is, I think, the wake-up call where people now recognize that nonviolent offenses don't necessarily mean that the offender isn't a violent offender.
Absolutely. We got to get to a break. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. We're trying to make sense of this assessment model and why people are getting out of jail. It seems as though if you're a chronic property offender, you're not going to be a very high risk level. But having said that, we understand what some of the downstream implications are by recent occurrences throughout the city. So who needs to wake up? We'll talk about that when we return. This is Newell on WWL. We're back and we're talking to Rafael Goyeneche from the Metropolitan Crime Commission about the crime wave of Theron Glover. And just hot off the presses, New Orleans Police Department sent this over this morning. He has been charged with an additional 19 incidents involving numerous stolen vehicles and auto burglaries. So his numbers are on the rise, and I think he's somewhere around 100 now.
Closing in on it quickly.
Yeah, quickly. And it seems as though from this release as well, I didn't know this yesterday, he was arrested with some juveniles. Thank God they didn't run in a car because we wouldn't have been able to chase them. They made the mistake of running on foot. And the NOPD, and I must congratulate the 3rd District for being on the ball here, they were able to apprehend these offenders in a foot chase.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, they're just giving up and just succumbing to the commands of the police. They're runners.
Yeah, no. And really, the police department recognizes that if the department is going to make more of an impact in reducing violent crime, they have to address the automobile thefts and automobile burglaries because they blend together. There's a tie-in between all of that. We've seen that, you know, repeatedly with some of the videos. And in this Glover case, I think it glaringly drives it home to the general public what the police department is dealing
with. You know, we looked at data many years ago. Chief Richard Rodrigue and a number of the folks that were in the Detective Bureau at the time in Jefferson Parish, two crimes that had a very strong nexus to violence as a juvenile. Battery on a teacher and stealing an automobile. And it was amazing the nexus between that and at some point in time in their near future of a violent crime.
Right, right.
And you're seeing this. I mean, if they're getting out of a car and popping caps and injuring four people, there's that nexus.
Right. You know, and
that's a near homicide.
And 6 weeks ago, there was a homicide. So that was a nonviolent automobile burglary that the car owner comes out and confronts the person that's in his car. And for doing that, you know, he's now facing the tragedy of losing his wife, and he's been wounded. And now that juvenile is, you know, in custody and will probably be charged with a murder offense.
You know, Rafi, you and I talked about this before. When you approach the situation that you're going to reduce incarceration beds and reduce the number of folks that you incarcerate pretrial, there are a number of silos that you're not going to be able to address because of the level of violence. There was a study that just came out. We have the highest per capita homicide rate in the country, not in New Orleans, in the entire state of Louisiana. And in this same study, we were in the top 10 in almost every category as it related to crime. So when you're running up against those types of statistics, and at the same time you're trying to decrease your jail population, this highlights chronic property offenders that are out there. Their business is steal other people's property. And we saw what some of the downstream implications can be where someone ultimately gets murdered. But when we think about a simple burglary, for example, a lot of people have high deductibles, some not well insured, the working poor, and then we wonder why our auto rates are the way they are. Because they're breaking into cars, and those that are adequately insured and make the claim, you know, that affects the community at large. And I think we're losing sight of the community impact as it relates to a lot of these crimes.
So a lot of these reforms were, you know, here we're dealing with, you know, let's reduce the jail population. Logically, you approach it by saying we need to reduce crime and the jail population will fall down. But what the city's doing and what advocates are advocating for, let's set lower bail for these offenders. Let them get out. And what we know, what law enforcement knows, is criminals are not specialists, they're generalists. They can be arrested for a nonviolent offense today and be involved in a violent offense tomorrow. So the people that are advocating for the release of quote unquote nonviolent offenders don't recognize the difference between the offense for which someone was arrested for and the offender in the context of their criminal history and the risk that they pose to the community. So what we're seeing now is, I think, a well-intentioned but ill-informed method of trying to reduce the pretrial population by misclassifying dangerous and violent offenders as nonviolent offenders. And really, the offenders are now viewed as victims. The victims that you just cited are invisible and voiceless. And the villains are the criminal justice officials now that are arresting these quote-unquote nonviolent offenders and putting them in
jail. Well, we've created this aura of over-criminalization now. So we've moved away from disproportionate impact to now it's over-criminalization. We've criminalized too many things. And so we're trying to retreat over what that may be. But it's pretty damn simple. Keep your hands off my damn property. Keep your hands off of me. You know, you mind your own business and I'll mind my own business. And if we can just kind of hold firm to those mandates, this is going to be a better place. But right. That's not what's happening here. And, you know, as this case, I'm assuming it's going to continue to reveal itself, because just with this press release this morning with another 19 incidents of stolen vehicles and auto burglaries, there's no telling where his final number is going to end up.
Exactly.
All right, we want to hear from you, 260-1870. My blood pressure's up. I don't know about yours, but this assessment tool, the more crime you commit, your rating goes down. That makes absolutely no sense to me. So whose obligation is it to look at this, get involved, see what's going on? Obviously, something from an operational standpoint has run awry. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. Yeah, that may be one way of describing this assessment tool matrix. Bad to the bone. Let's go to line one, talk to Danny out in Slidell. What say you, Danny?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I was listening to the show, and I guess my blood got boiled.
Yep.
How come you and Raphael ain't told us what judges are doing this? All you say is the judge. Who's the judge?
Well, it's going to be more than one. Raffy?
Right. So depending on the day that you're arrested, you'll appear before a different magistrate, judge, or commissioner. So there's been a whole assortment of different judges in this thing. Now, to the judge's credit, since Theron Glover's third booking, his bail has skyrocketed. So his first, as an 18-year-old, it was a nonviolent offense. Based on the assessment tool, they recommend free release. He got released for free. Second arrest about a month and a half later for some more nonviolent offenses. Still rated a level one, released on a $2,000 commercial surety bond, which means for a couple of $100 he got out. When he got arrested again in late May, and he was hit with over 30 counts of burglary, then his bond went to over $300,000. So what it shows me is that the judges are not just blindly following the assessment tool. When they recognize the difference between nonviolent offenses and the risk that an offender poses to the community. So the third time that he came in there, his bond was set high, and every time that he's been booked, even though his rating level either was unchanged or reduced, the bond has been set higher and higher and higher. So, you know, the moral to this story is that, you know, the public is now recognizing the difference between nonviolent offenses don't necessarily adequately explain if the offender is a violent offender. And then this assessment tool that has been used by the city to drive down the pretrial population is flawed and skewed, and I think is minimizing the danger that an offender poses to the community in the name of trying to reduce the jail population. I've tracked bail trends in criminal district court over the last 4 years, and every category of bail for felony arrests is down between 20 and 60% over the last 4 years, with the exception of homicide. So now, if you're charged with a burglary, you're looking at less than a $10,000 bond, which means that for 13%, $1,300, you're being released.
But on this assessment tool, correct me if I'm wrong, we have a lot of examples of people charged with homicide that rate a level one.
Yes. So I reviewed fourth quarter and the third quarter of 2018 to see what the assessment tool rated offenders charged with various offenses. There were 34 people booked in the third and fourth quarters of 2018 with homicide, and 32.4% of them were rated a risk level one, means free release and no supervision. And another 15% were rated a risk level two, which means free release and only phone contact with an offender. Now, fortunately, the judges aren't following those recommendations.
Thank God.
Because homicide bonds have actually increased over the last 4 years. But every other category of crime, particularly the nonviolent crime, but even the violent crime, is down 20 to 60%, all in the name of trying to reduce the pretrial jail population at the expense of public safety in some instances.
That's why the criteria that goes into the assessment tool is incredibly important. You don't want to deviate from the assessment tool once you adopt it, because then it becomes subjective, not objective, right? So you need to, but that highlights the fact that you've got to make sure that your assessment tool is actually validated, and that it's serving the all-encompassing purpose that it's intended to serve.
So this assessment tool was devised from other cities that reduce the jail population by creating meaningful pretrial services program. So the prime example that's used is Washington, D.C., where they eliminated money bail decades ago. So almost everybody that is charged with a felony offense is released, with the exception of a small percentage of violent offenders like murderers and rapists. So they're released for free. But to manage that population, their pretrial service budget in 2017, which was the last year it was published online, was $65 million. $30 million was spent on supervising the people that were being released. We're not spending anything on supervising the people that are being released. We're letting them phone in if they're released, or come in once a month to visit with one of the three or four staff members that work in this program. There is no electronic monitoring. So these other cities that have moved to this model have beefed up their pretrial services, and I think that is skewing the recommendations, because those other cities have more robust supervision of the people that are being released. So they're saying those people can be released more safely without jeopardizing the public, because there are electronic monitors in place on these offenders. We don't have any of that in New Orleans. We're not supervising anyone in a meaningful way.
Well, that's because the alternatives in many cases, if you do it right,
it's going to cost more money.
It costs more money. We always look at this saying, oh, incarceration is more than the alternative. No, not if you're having meaningful alternatives. And that's not to say that we shouldn't do it, but it's not just a money factor thing.
It's a public safety
factor. It's a public safety factor thing. Exactly. Couldn't have said it any better. We'll be right back. Want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. If your blood's not boiling yet, you may want to just ponder it for a moment. Get back with us. We'll be right back. We're back, and we're talking to Rafi Goyeneche, where we've been talking about Theron Glover, who's up to almost 100 burglaries and vehicle burglaries, house burglaries, 4 shootings.
Automobile thefts.
Yeah. He doesn't discriminate. He's involved in just about everything.
Young entrepreneur.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about, we compare ourselves, we were just looking at this report in D.C. when you talk about alternatives to incarceration. They have over 370 people, FTEs, assigned to supervising, managing, maintaining the alternatives to supervision.
Exactly.
We're short 300 police officers, I think, by the last count, if I'm memory serves me correctly.
Conservatively, correct. Yeah.
You know, conservatively, and they have that many just in the alternative side, in what we would call, I guess, probation, for lack of a better term.
And pretrial probation.
Right.
And, you know, the budget for that is $65 million.
Right.
$65 million.
To put that in perspective, that's half of the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office budget. And that's probably maybe a little more than a third of the New Orleans Police Department budget.
And those are people that have been arrested. They're being released.
Right.
And a lot of them have monitors on them, but not all of them. But we're releasing 100% of the people without monitors on them. So we have no way of effectively managing
them. It's the same
thing
we did, if you recall, and you and I talked about this in my previous life with juveniles under the... Then Lieutenant Governor Mitch Landrieu led the implosion of the juvenile detention facilities around the state because we were going to go into these alternatives for incarceration. And I warned then, and I do again now, you don't implode the incarceration model until the alternatives are in place, tested, validated, and you know they're working. Because it's too hard to restart an incarceration facility and too costly.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you may have more expense in the overlap, but that's just the pain that you're going to have to experience if you're serious about the safety of the community at large before you do this.
Yep, right. So there's 48 beds that are available at the Youth Study Center for pretrial detention. So that means virtually everybody that is charged with a nonviolent offense as a juvenile is going to be released. And unfortunately, some of the juveniles that were arrested for nonviolent offenses are going to be rearrested for crimes of violence. But in January, the city did away with electronic monitoring. So electronic monitoring is a disincentive for somebody that's given a second chance to violate curfew or be involved in a crime. And if they are involved in a crime, that technology is shared with law enforcement and can put the person wearing a monitor at the scene of a crime when the crime was committed. So we used to have that. We did away with it in January of this year. We need electronic monitoring back. We need it supervised by law enforcement. It needs to be a partnership between the New Orleans Police Department, the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office, and the Real-Time Crime Center. So that is, I think, an essential that we need. It won't cure all of the problems, but it is a vast improvement over what we have because we're releasing people like Theron Glover on the honor system, and that's not working out too well for the general public.
You know what's interesting is that and I'm sure in this assessment model, we don't even look at their juvenile record. He may have one. He may not have one. I'd be curious to find out if he does, because you and I often talked about you have to assess the defendant, not the instant crime, because there's more to this story.
Exactly.
And usually their history says a lot more about them than what they may ultimately be in court for on any given day. But we just completely wipe that slate clean and don't try to gain a better understanding of who it actually is in front of us, what that individual's home life may be, what the challenges are. And we give them these get-out-of-jail-free cards. It seems to me to be a very risky proposition.
Well,
And it's coming home to roost now. And it's amazing that just... You know, from February to now, the mindset change that's going on. I remember at your function, Leon Canizzaro, given, I thought, a well-thought-out and very reasoned speech and a warning that this was going to happen.
Yeah. No.
And we're living it right now in living color, technicolor.
Right.
And, you know, I hadn't heard any apologies of all the criticizing, but the realities are is that it's come home to roost, and it came home to roost a lot quicker, I think, than anybody thought.
Well, you know, that wasn't just a guess on the part of the district attorney. That was 40 years of experience.
Sure.
You know, doing that. The police department, they saw this train heading towards the cliff. That's part of the reason why I think you've seen the curfew dusted off and brought back as a proactive tool for the NOPD to try and get a handle on some of these juvenile offenders that are out after hours and committing some serious crimes.
And I hope they let the chief talk, because they know. Yep. And there's this feeling sometimes, because the previous administration didn't let the chief really say what he was thinking, that things were something other than they truly were.
Yeah.
And how do we gain the benefit of their experience if we don't let them articulate what the situations are and what the challenges are and what the threats, most importantly, are to the community day in and day out? We'll be back for Rafi's final comments when we return. This is Newell on WWO. On a text line, I get a parking ticket and they come after me more than the murderers. I wonder what you would rate on this assessment for a parking ticket.
I don't know. I mean, what we're seeing is it costs more to get a speeding ticket than it does to get out of jail for certain felonies.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I made light of it, but when I put pen to paper, as you just so appropriately pointed out, you may end up paying $50, $60, $70, $80 more on tickets than getting out on a burglary.
Yep. So
now, something
that's upside down.
That's upside down.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. And I think the more the public knows and they can start questioning this, I think it's a healthy sign for public safety, because I think public safety has been kicked to the side at the expense of victimizing offenders that are preying on law-abiding citizens in this community.
And I think we underestimate the pain and the cost of a vehicle burglary, of a simple burglary. For folks that work hard and they go out and they buy their nice little flat panel TV, and, you know, especially in the advent of the New Orleans Saints football season, I mean, how many TVs you think are purchased and then it's gone?
Yep.
And, you know, their deductible is too high. I have one of those myself, and you end up having to foot the bill.
Yep.
And that's a lot of pain. And, it, you know, and when you're in that group, it has impact on your life in a huge way. And I don't think this assessment is not evaluating any of that.
Right.
Not at all.
Yep.
Of the community impact.
Yep. And I think you're seeing some of the judges now recognizing that this isn't a valid assessment.
Thanks
because
so much.
They're ignoring the recommendations.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.